This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, Sevilla Mann talks with a Western Michigan University researcher studying white nose syndrome, which can kill hibernating bats. But first, how much warmer can the Earth get before there are serious consequences? That's a question scientists have been debating, and a topic that Western Michigan University Professor of Biological Sciences David Corot plans to tackle as part of the Lyceum Lecture Series at Western. His address Wednesday at noon is called What's at Risk? 2 degrees versus 4 degrees warming. David Corot, thank you for being with us.
My pleasure. It's great to be here.
Let's talk about those two numbers. What's the significance, 2 degrees and 4 degrees?
4 degrees, really a little bit above 4 degrees, is the likely increase in global average temperature by the end of the century, 2100, if we continue on our current path.
4 degrees Celsius?
4 degrees Celsius, so 7-8 degrees Fahrenheit. The warming would be more than that in high latitudes, a little bit less than that in the tropics, more than that over land, less than that over the oceans, but on average about 4-4.5 degrees. If we don't make major changes in where we get our energy from, 2 degrees is sort of a compromise between what the scientific community thinks we should do and what the scientific community thinks we have a chance to do. 2 degree warming would be the result of shifting over fairly quickly and fairly extensively to alternate energy sources, non-carbon-based energy sources. And it corresponds to how much Earth would warm if we, by mid-century, got about 80% of our energy from non-fossil fuel sources.
And again, we're talking 2 degrees Celsius, so
right.
More like 3.6 degrees Fahrenheit, something like that?
Right, exactly. Yep. Doesn't sound like much, but as a change in global average temperature, it's huge.
You mentioned there the idea that scientists would prefer something else. I mean, would scientists just prefer that we not warm at all?
Sure. Yeah. I think without question, the best alternative is to not allow Earth to warm. But that would require either major changes in energy infrastructure in a very, very, at a very rapid pace, which I think is possible. It's just not something that we're, as a species, entertaining as a reasonable possibility now. Or it would require manipulating the climate in some other way. We don't have good ways to do that yet. We have ways in which, in theory, we could cool the planet, for instance, putting reflective surfaces in high in the atmosphere or on the ocean, essentially mirrors that would bounce sunlight back out to space before the surface of the Earth could convert it into heat. But those are highly theoretical at this point. There's nothing that we are close to being able to implement.
When we talk about this 2 degrees or 4 degrees warming, what's our base point here? Where are we starting from? Are we starting from now, or are we starting from a ways back and saying that, you know, the temperature has warmed and it would warm more to get to this 2 degree point?
That's a really good question. It depends which paper you are reading. Most of the recent papers use as their baseline the average temperature of the Earth from 1980 to 2000. So essentially warming from now. In 1980, Earth was about 7/10 of a degree Celsius warmer than before the Industrial Revolution. So it doesn't make too much difference. What you use as your starting point is about 7/10 of a degree difference.
So what is the risk if the Earth does get 2 degrees warmer? What are we looking at in terms of changes that we might face as people, as a human species?
Right. The way I'm going to talk about this subject on Wednesday, I'm going to actually try to take a relatively optimistic or hopeful viewpoint. And what I'm going to do is talk first about what our current pathway, what consequences there will be of our current pathway for 4.5 degrees, and then talk about how what we would gain by limiting warming to 2 degrees. A necessary conclusion is that 2 degrees is not without adverse consequences. I mean, there are problems with 2 degrees, but there are way more problems with 4-4.5 degrees. For instance, if we allow Earth to warm as we are currently doing, so that it reaches 4 degrees by the end of the century, that will likely result in about 400 million more people at risk of getting malaria, mostly in Africa, although some actually in the southern United States. If we limit warming to 2 degrees, we cut that number in half. So one of the ways to look at the benefits of shifting over to alternate energy sources is that we prevent potentially 200 million cases of malaria a year. Another way to look at it is that heat waves, of course, would be less frequent, less intense, less, they would have be of shorter duration, and as a consequence, less lethal. So, for instance, a prediction is that with 4.5 degree warming, Boston is likely to have about 1,100 deaths per year due to heat waves. If we keep warming to 2 degrees, that's less than 400 per year. So we save over 700 people a year just in Boston alone. And those are, I think, important ways to look at the benefits of the choice we have. The choice we have is, do we continue to use fossil fuels the way we have, or roughly the way we have, or do we make a very concerted effort to shift over to safer, really saner energy sources? And the focus has largely been on the cost of shifting from, you know, business as usual to a different lifestyle, different source of energy. I think the emphasis should be more so on the benefits of doing that. And that's what I'll try to present on Wednesday. And we can measure those benefits in all kinds of ways. It's relatively easy to measure it in terms of benefits to human health. For instance, reduced deaths due to heat stress, reduced malaria. There are other human health benefits that are harder to quantify. I think the probability of armed conflict is much greater if we allow Earth to warm 4 degrees than 2 degrees. It's hard to quantify exactly what it is.
Well, why do you think that? What's the theory behind that?
Because 4 degree warming results in much more frequent, severe, prolonged droughts, which cause crop failures. And in much of the world where subsistence agriculture is the way of life, crop failures mean that it's very difficult to survive. And those kinds of stresses on human societies almost certainly will result in some increased level of armed conflict. Resources become much scarcer. So if you don't have them, but your neighbor does, you have little choice but to try to use force to gain them. That's the idea anyway. And the climate-related events that precipitate conflict would be much reduced at 2 degree than relative to 4 degree. And then there are other consequences, for instance, for ecosystems. I mean, it's very hard to make a global prediction about extinctions, but our best estimate at this point is that if we allow Earth to warm about 4 degrees, we probably will lose close to 40% of all species on the planet. If we keep warming to 2 degrees, it's more like 10% of species. So you can think of shifting from coal to solar and wind to generate electricity helps us save 30% of Earth's species from extinction. It's a very rough estimate, but it's likely to be somewhere in that ballpark.
There have been a number of articles. There was a study from researchers at the University of California, San Diego, saying that it's really probably past the point that we can limit warming to 2 degrees Celsius over the next however many number of years you want to pick, that we're going to go past that. What do you say to that? Do you think that it is difficult?
Oh, it's difficult. But it really requires a concerted global effort. It can't be done by one country. It has to be done by an international coalition, especially of the major carbon emitters, which are Europe, China, United States, India. But the developing countries are emitting now a substantial portion of carbon, so they have to be involved too. But we have the technologies to stop using almost all fossil fuels quite quickly if we wanted to. It just would, we see it as disruptive and therefore undesirable to do that. But if we had no choice, if we knew without a doubt, for instance, that our planet would be irreparably changed such that it was not suitable for human habitation if we didn't do something within 10 years, if we didn't stop using fossil fuels within 10 years, what would we say? Would we say, well, we can't do that, so I guess our planet is gone? Or would we say, we'll do it in 5 years? And I think we would say we'll do it in 5. We know that we have the capacity. We just don't have the will to do it yet. Coal is the easiest fossil fuel to abandon, to replace. We have other ways of generating electricity, solar and wind, that actually, if you include the health costs of using coal, these alternate energy sources for electricity turn out to be less expensive per kilowatt hour. So we have technologies that are even economically feasible.
Well, the question, though, is often raised, are these technologies able to produce as much energy as we produce right now?
Right. Yeah, one of the falsehoods that is quite common is that, for instance, wind and solar are either incapable of producing the amount of electricity we want or incapable of producing a consistent, reliable stream of electricity. Both of those.
Because, for instance, there are days when we don't see the sun. Sure. So are we able to get energy on a day when it's very overcast and not much sunlight's available?
Right. It's an argument that on the surface sounds reasonable, but it's not. Solar energy. So all you really need is some way of storing energy while you're making it in excess of what you're using at that point, and then being able to tap that when you're not making it currently. So with solar, not photovoltaics, but the solar thermal techniques, so the kinds that are used in big utility scale solar farms, for instance, in our Southwest, basically differ from a coal-fired power plant only in where the heat is coming from to make steam. Okay, both of them generate steam. The expansion of steam drives turbines that generates electricity. In a coal-fired power plant, we get the heat from burning coal, and as a consequence, put a lot of carbon into the air and other particulate matter and so on that harms people downwind. In a solar thermal utility scale installation, we just use the sun to make the heat. You focus the sun's rays on a material that can heat up to, let's say, 1200 degrees Celsius, and you use that heat to make steam. And from that point on, it's the same as a coal-fired power plant. You use the steam to drive a turbine that generates electricity. So on sunny days, for instance, in the Southwest, those installations can make so much heat that they can't possibly use all the electricity they could generate at the moment. All that's required is a heat reservoir, for instance, buried in the sand right next to the tower, that can store excess heat during the day, and then all night long you can make steam, and if you can make steam, you can make electricity. So it's a very simple fix. And people who spread the argument that solar is no good because it can never be our sole source of electricity because it's an intermittent source, actually know that that's not true.
So if we do go past this 2 degrees Celsius threshold, or even worse, go past the 4 degrees Celsius threshold, are there ways to reverse that and bring the temperatures back down?
In theory, yes. So they fall into a category called geoengineering solutions. And the most promising, although it's still nowhere near close to even being demonstrated on a small scale, but still the most promising category is manipulating the solar budget of the Earth. So basically taking the only natural factor that we know has been responsible for Earth's climate changes in the past and manipulating it, basically bouncing sunlight back to space before it can hit a surface and heat up that surface. You know, light energy gets converted into heat energy when it hits a surface. That's why we sunbathe. And so in theory, we could reflect some of it back, but we have no idea what the consequences would be of putting mirrors in space or small, very small reflective particles in the stratosphere or ionosphere or wherever. It I think has to be seen as a very last-ditch attempt to rescue the planet. We have better ways to do it. And we can create jobs, we can clean up our air, we can save lives, we can make Earth a better place in many ways, in addition to keeping the climate from getting, from changing so much that the planet becomes very difficult to inhabit.
David Corot, thank you very much for your time.
Sure, my pleasure.
David Corot is a professor of biological sciences at Western Michigan University. His address titled, What's at Risk? 2 Degrees versus 4 Degrees Warming, is part of the Lyceum Lecture Series. His talk is scheduled for noon on Wednesday in Western Michigan University's Lee Honors College. A link with more details and more from David Corot, including his thoughts on Western Michigan University's sustainability practices, can be found at WMUK.org.